All right, hello and welcome to episode 18 of the official At You Two podcast. We are now legally allowed to vote. I think it's in the U.S. and I forget what that gets you in Canada. We'll discuss that maybe with our guests because he might know more about Canada than I do even. This is the U2 18 album of the podcast. We are live streaming as always at goodstuff.fm/live. Hello to our listeners who are tuning in live. Thank you for tuning in. Giving up your Wednesday night, which is now an hour later, I found out, thanks to daylight savings time, which I've completely forgot about, because anybody who knows the world and knows Saskatchewan, where I'm from, we don't change, and especially we don't change our clocks. But anyways, I digress. Enough about me. On the show tonight, we have got Sherry. Hello, Sherry.
Greetings, everybody. How are you?
What time is it in your world, Sherry?
Right now it is 10:39 p.m. and my body clock is starting to get acclimated to Dublin time. So
I see. So we'll maybe get into that in a little bit, but you're getting acclimatized. Are you spritzing yourself with rain at random points throughout the night?
Probably, but I'd like to think of it as being bonotized instead. Right. So.
And also on the show, we have special guest Mark Baker, also known as YouTube Brother on the Twitters and elsewhere. But welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And I guess continuity, what time is it in your world, Mark?
What time is it in the world? It's showtime. No, it's 10:39 in Toronto.
All right. And so what we get new guests on the show to sort of explain is a bit of their background. What got you into U2 in the first place? Were you an Actung baby? Are you a boy? I don't know what we say. But anyways, when did you fall in crazy love or whatever with U2?
I think I fell in crazy love with them for Actung Baby, because that was when I first saw them on Zoo TV. But I mean, I was listening actively. I think Unforgettable Fire, Bad, when I started hearing those songs come out just before Joshua Tree, was when I was like, whoa, these guys have something to say, or they're powerful. But really, really, truly, to be very truthful, after Joshua Tree, when Actung Baby came out, I was like full throttle.
Nice.
How's that?
Yeah.
There's that full throttle. Yes.
Yeah. That's my story too. One thing I forgot to mention, sorry, in introduction to the show is last episode, now a few weeks ago as we record this, but last episode I put out just a random call that said, hey, if anybody's listening and you can somehow take a picture of yourself listening to the podcast, take a picture of yourself while you're listening to the podcast and tweet at it with @U2podcast as a hashtag. I'd love to see where the show is being heard in the world. And so actually Roland Hodnot sent me a picture of himself listening to this show with the podcast artwork. I guess it looks like on an iPad or a tablet, and from Mount Pearl, Newfoundland, Canada. So all the way out in the East Coast. And so thank you very much, Mark, for sending that, or Roland, sorry, for sending that in.
And, Canada represent. Canada.
Exactly.
The world needs more Canada.
There we
those
go.
Those are fantastic pictures on his bulletin board.
I was wondering in the background. I'll put a link
all
in the chat.
All aboard the denial train. Yeah. I like that.
It looked a little mugshot-ish or something in the background. I wasn't sure what was going on. It's a little blurry there, but no, we won't spend the whole podcast analyzing your bulletin board, Roland. But
thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. We love audience participation of all forms, and we'll get into, of course, the Ask At You Two hashtag questions that were sent in, and for the show. And before we go any further, I guess just by way of mentioning, of course, we're all, I'm sure, fairly well aware of what went down in Paris and Beirut last week, and obviously how it affected U2's gigs in Paris and the HBO recording and stuff. So we will discuss that and how it relates to it. We want to, I think I can speak for the show anyways, when I want to say that obviously the bombings, the loss of life, the injury and the terror that happened is infinitely more important than anything we're going to discuss in great detail. As much as we love all this stuff and it does affect it, that stuff is infinitely more important, obviously. And so we don't intend any disrespect or anything like that, but we aren't going to also dwell a bunch on it in this episode just because it's not our expertise. And there's been lots of discussion, I'm sure you've heard. And we want to sort of continue on with the joy and the fun of discussing you too, I think. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Good point. Very good point.
Cool. So, Sherry, you had a few items of miscellanea. You've added your own segment to the podcast, I see.
Well, when you leave it open for me to do some edits, I am a writer after all.
Right.
The, you know, all that said about what's transpired over the past few days, it did impact the Belfast show that just concluded a few hours ago. We are recording this on Wednesday night. So there were different visuals during Sunday Bloody Sunday and throughout the show, actually. Yeah, Raised by Wolves. And then also during the Stephen Hawking video that that starts Act 3, there was the Paris peace symbol that looks like the Eiffel Tower, along with the hashtag stronger than fear. And it was really nice to be able to see, it was a fan-based effort to do the hashtag stronger than fear and to do the hashtag of Whiteout Belfast. And a lot of people participated in that. Larry wore a white shirt tonight. We would like to think that was his way of acknowledging what was going on.
Not so that was again.
So that was very nice, you know. So I know that our friends over at YouTube Gigs, they are currently uploading their videos from Belfast onto YouTube. Sunday Bloody Sunday is currently available. And by the time we go live, other songs should also be made available there. So, you know, take a few minutes out, go to YouTube, check out how they're changing it up, especially for the Irish audience. They have expanded their call out for rest in peace, that it's no longer just the victims of those incidents in Dublin back in 1974. They've expanded it out to all of the different acts that, you know, happened in Derry and Belfast, in Omagh, in Enniskillen, and so on and so forth. So it's a very moving tribute that tries to unite the whole of Ireland instead of having it be, you know, the us versus them. You know, it's only us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent. That's good.
So that was one piece of miscellany. The other one is, and I'm constantly getting emailed this, and I'm just as frustrated as everybody else, that there is still no new information for fan club renewal for those people who are in this loop for the past decade. It's like Groundhog Day. I wake up and it's the same thing all over again. So as soon as we have any new information, you better best bet your sweet bippy I'm going to put something up in Bits and Bytes. I will continue to say that wait until the very last minute to renew. That will make life a lot easier. But if you're within 24 hours of your renewal, so, you know, in my case, my renewal is December 2nd. If I don't hear anything by December 1st, I'm going to renew and then go into Zootopia. And there's a board on there specifically about subscription gifts and subscription renewals. Post there that you just renewed, but you don't want this year's fan club gift because you've already received it, just to have a running record. So the Zoo mods will be able to have something to go on. But like I said, as soon as I hear anything, I will alert the masses as quickly as I can. So that is that on the fan club renewal. And we would just like to congratulate Tim Neufeld and all of the Crystal Ballroom folks for being, drumroll please, U2.com's fan site of the week. So that is fantastic.
That's awesome.
So we're very, very excited for them. And we might just be joining them next week, but I can't make that official announcement.
You might have maybe just did that, but you didn't. So.
The crow flies at midnight. Yeah. Crow flies at midnight. You didn't hear it from me. Wink, wink.
Yeah, and there's a great, where is it on? It's in the Zootopia section. There's a write-up on Tim's, Tim, I'm not familiar with his work, but Tim's, I'm just kidding. No, it's a great little write-up and photos and stuff about what Tim and the Crystal Ballroom crew, what does he call?
Crystal Heads, I
Crystal
think.
Crystal Heads.
Crystal Heads.
Okay, yeah.
#U2CB.
Better than meth heads, crystal heads.
I didn't think it was ball heads or something. That wouldn't be very good. Wouldn't roll off the tongue. Anyways.
Chris, we might be able to put that into the show notes. What do you think?
I think so. That's what I was just going to say. If you're listening later and wondering where to find all this information that we're talking about, you can find it at goodstuff.fm/@U2/18 will be this episode's show number. And you'll find it in there. And so moving along, the next portion of the show we have is the inbox of our Ask@U2 hashtag. So, Mark, I'll embarrass you just a little bit on the show.
Okay.
Have you ever listened to the podcast?
You know what? I'm an avid reader of @U2. I'm an avid clicker of @U2. I've actually didn't know that there was a podcast. I'm sorry. I'm a bad fan.
It's really bad.
No, I'm kidding. We talked about beforehand, so I knew I was putting Mark.
So I'm happy to know there is one, and when I'm on the plane, like Sherry said, I'm going to put 7 hours on my phone and just fly into the abyss.
Yeah, that's probably what will happen if you listen to all 17 episodes in a row.
Fall asleep to the dulcet tones of Matt McGee.
Yes. Yes.
What better way to go? The way we do this is folks, listeners, send in tweets with the hashtag #AskAtU2, and then we answer and talk about them on the show. So we'll jump right in. Feel free to jump in. Sherry has some thoughts. You can have some thoughts. I might have some thoughts, and we'll sort of discuss these. What we got? Three, I think. So at SPPS Arnold asked, how much of U2 Live is loop/pre-recorded or played by others out of sight? We've talked a little bit about this, but Sherry, I know you had some thoughts just to get us started.
Well, sups Arnold, if we were to let some of that magic go away, YouTube might not like us anymore. But the answer to your question is there is a considerable amount being done in the underworld. Terry Lawless is set up underneath Edge on the main stage, and he is the magic behind it all. It's a shame that he's not more public, because he is very much there with the band performing while everything is going on live. So we all hail Terry Lawless for everything that he does. As far as how much of it, nobody has ever said exactly how much, but if you look on the stage and you hear what these four people are playing and the instruments that they're playing, and if you hear something different, that's probably being played elsewhere in the arena.
Yeah, as you can definitely see, like Edge sometimes will trigger synth effects or whatever for the start of something, and obviously that he's not actually playing a synth, but there is, like, you know, he plays a piano for some songs, and when he's playing, it's not like, I don't think they ever fake it. Like, Edge doesn't ever mime that he's playing the guitar when there's actually no guitar being played, or he's not actually, you know, the audio is not playing. But
as a guy who plays in a U2 tribute band, like, we play our instruments, but there is some instrumentation that it's called a backing track. So it's not really the guitar or the bass per se, and it's not the drums, but sometimes there are extra synths or whatever, and we actually have a backing track. Our drummer plays with a click. Here's a click in his ear, and then when we start the song, it sort of it goes, and you just can't make a mistake or you'll come off track.
Yeah.
Right. It's really important to do, but it's not like, it's not faking it per se. It's just, there's some elements that you add to the song. For example, song one, you'd be surprised as to just playing it with four guys and playing it with just a bit of backing track, which isn't cheating, but it's just, that's what bands do. That's what bands do. And I would imagine Terry Lawless does some of this live as well underneath. And some of it is, recorded with the track for the song, particular song.
Yeah, think about Streets. I'll give you an example.
Or think about even, Bad. I call it mm-hmm. The twinkle in Bad. Somebody's not there twinkling the whole time. That would be lots of twinkling, right? For Bad. Right? So you need to have
Oops.
Not twinkling, but you know what I mean?
I've never thought of it as a twinkle before. That is fantastic.
But the Bad twinkle, for example, is something that Edge isn't playing. Adam's not playing. Larry's not playing. Bono isn't either. It is just a backing track that adds to the song. Simple.
That's a good show title right there, sense? Bad Twinkle. Yeah, I think I can echo having played only once in a U2 cover band, but and I know actually somebody emailed me, I don't have it in front of me, but the person who emailed me asking about would we ever discuss U2 tribute bands on the podcast. That's definitely a topic we have for a discussion down the road where we want to get a bunch of folks like Mark and whoever else who've been in or are in U2 cover bands and just chat about it, because it's just a fun kind of little sub-genre of music almost or whatever, and we'll definitely do that in the future. But yeah, you can...
By the way, for the listeners who don't know, Mark's tribute band is called Acrobat.
Yes, Acrobat. Our website is U2TributeLive.com, and you can see pictures and find out all of this.
So in answer to the question of will Acrobat be played on this tour... They did.
The answer was yes.
Yeah. So you can stop asking for it.
Yeah.
No, we kid. Okay, moving along. We're going to discuss all of Mark's exploits on the U2 stage. Don't worry. We'll get to it all. At RJ4Barbie asks, will you please do a few shows at the Apollo Theater? And sure, he was asking, U2 or at U2, which we'd love to do a live podcast at the Apollo Theater. That'd be awesome. But yeah, Sherry, what did you think about this?
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I think they mean the Apollo Theater in New York City. There is the Apollo Victoria Theater in London, where the band played in 1983, but currently they have the Broadway production of Wicked. And the only time that any member of U2 has performed at the Apollo is Bono for Angel of Harlem doing this, doing it solo for the Jazz Foundation of America's annual concert and gala. Now, I do believe that Angel of Harlem, the video itself, was filmed there, but as far as them actually performing a live concert in front of a paid audience, that has not happened yet. So yeah, that would be really, really cool if they could do that. We can put in a request, but they still haven't answered our question about what sandwich do they like. So I doubt that would go very far. And for those who look at it from a more microscopic view, there were two other Apollo theaters. There was the Apollo in Manchester, where the band played four times between 1982 and 1984, which has now been rebranded the O2 Manchester. And then there's the Apollo Entertainment Center in Adelaide, Australia, where they played twice in 1984, but that venue is now demolished. The tours site, tours.atu2.com, you can search by venue. So if you have a question about a particular venue to see if U2 has ever performed there, you can do a venue search.
Which is pretty cool.
Cool.
Very awesome work that the tours crew does over at tours.atu2.com. At Joshua Harvey asked, does anyone know what happened to Bono's rosary? I don't personally know. Does Mark or Sherry, do you know?
No, I don't actually.
Well, the question becomes which one, because he has several. I do know that there is one that is on his dressing room quick change that he sometimes uses. If you were in Paris over the weekend, we had reports that he was wearing a rosary like necklace for either night one or night two in Paris. He had put it on during act three. So for City of Blinding Lights and for the rest of the show, he had switched necklaces.
That's the black bead one, right? The classic.
Yes, that's
black
the, yep.
the black beads and the antique kind of linkage with it, I would imagine, right?
Right.
Okay.
I don't know if there's a this may be sacrilegious or something, but Bono's rosary on Twitter, is there a Twitter account yet for
We've got one for his belly, so why not?
Every other appendage. Or, yeah. By the end of the show, maybe there will be. Anyways, that's the end of the inbox for this segment of the show. As always, you can send in your questions and comments using the hashtag AskAtU2 on Twitter, and we'll collect those and throw them into our grab bag of stuff for the next episode. And you can play along at home. And I guess you probably get a prize of some sort for having your question answered on the show. We haven't figured out what the prize is yet, but we'll go back and make sure everybody gets one when we do. All right, so we're going to slip in a little quick episode of the Guess That Song, Name That Tune, since we had Mark on, who, as he mentioned, he plays in a U2 tribute band. So, I mean, if anybody would know any
pressure's on
little segment of a song.
Pressure's on now. Oh,
you play bass, right? You play the part of Adam?
I'm the bass player, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
I'm the bass player.
So I'm trying to think if any of these are bass-focused, but we'll play Mark against Sherry against the chat room, but Sherry's played this a couple times before, so she might know. It's a bit of a repeat of some of the songs just because it was last minute edition.
So I'm going to hide the chat so I can't cheat. How's that?
Yeah. The chat gets it a few seconds after you do because there's a delay. So
there's a delay? Okay.
They might not see it or get it before you do. So Sherry and Mark, you ready?
Oh, sleep like ready. A baby tonight.
I don't have my buzzer with me, so I forgot that part, but we'll just play it anyways. Okay, here's the first one.
Oh, north south of the river.
Oh, that's a tie, I think. Give
you
both a point.
No way. I think I got that.
It's hard to tell with the Skype delay who is actually coming in first, and U2GW got it as well. North and south of the river. Okay, this is another one that Sherry hasn't heard before. Or, she's heard the song, I'm sure, but hasn't played this one.
Gone.
Very
gone,
good.
Gone.
There you go. Mark gets that point.
See, it's not easy.
It's not always easy, no. That one was pretty loud.
I'm nervous. I'm all like sweaty.
Good job, pop music, mofo.
Actually.
Or no.
Chris.
Oh, her. Go ahead.
Chris, do I get bonus points? Because if I think that version of Gone that you just played was live and not the studio recording.
Oh, that's a close one, but you're actually wrong because it was the
remix,
the alternate version on the Greatest Hits one or whatever, when they had that one different verse.
See, so I knew it was different than the album version.
I think there's like an extra shaker or something going in that one. I don't know.
It needed more cowbell.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now we're going into
definitely is the back of track.
Territory that, exactly. Territory that Sherry's heard before, but she's welcome to play along because they can be tough. So here we go with another one.
I know it, but I want to.
Oh
let
my gosh! Hold on.
See if you can get it.
It's off of
chat room. Got
Rattle and Hum. It's off of Rattle and Hum. What is it? Was it
Hawkmoon 269?
Hawkmoon 269.
Oh. Yes.
All right. Let's see. Here we go with another one. I'm trying to randomize these.
Mark, do you got it?
It's tough for an accent, baby.
Another time, another place.
Very good.
Nice. Same time as the chat room.
See, I had to sing it out. I have to sing it out.
Okay, here we go with another. We'll do a couple more.
If God will send his angels.
Very good.
God. There you go. You have to sing them out. Sing them out.
God, I know. God. I try to pick out like sort of obscure parts of it just so that. Here's a good one for a bass player. I don't know if you'd ever play this song live, but.
Okay. Daddy's going to pay for your crash car.
No.
Oh, it's some days are better than others.
There you go. Yeah.
Very good. Some days you feel like a puppy. Terrible.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever played that song live?
Some days, No, we haven't. No. No, we haven't.
That's whenever I grab some a bass, that's the one I grab. Okay, we'll do a couple more. What did I say? Anyways, we'll do another one for sure.
Oh, lay down.
I love the process.
I did the same thing last
Love and
week.
Peace.
You got
love
it. You got it. You got
there
it.
There you go.
Gotta sing them out. Gotta sing them out.
Okay. We'll do one more. Just one more.
Sleep like a baby tonight.
You are brutal, Ed. You're brutal.
Yeah, that's the high notes there. When the churches were all right, I lost track of the score, but...
yeah. Song, man.
Don't be afraid of the falsetto is what I always say.
Yeah, that one's for Matt, like the chat room says. That's just for Matt. Because I know
that's what he gets for...
Couldn't be here.
Doing work stuff tonight.
Exactly. Well, I don't know where the score ended up on that one. I think Mark won. The score is made up and the points don't matter, but Mark won. Chat room was a close second. Sherry got third, but we disqualified her before she
You
started.
Told me I couldn't play. And I'm very upset with you. You didn't play Acrobat. That would have been a gimme for him.
It would have been. It would have been.
What I got wrong last week.
See, I don't know if you would have, now that you've said it. That's a tough one. That sounds like almost anything off Act Tongue Baby is the problem.
Yeah, see, I got that one wrong last week. So all week I've been listening to that.
Play that one again. That is Don't Let the Bastards Drag You Down at the end, the very end, no? Am I right?
Yes. See, that's what I mean. It sounds like almost anything off Act Tongue, because that is actually Acrobat, but it's just the ending of it. Yeah. I was sneaky and grabbed just like the last 5 seconds of it or something.
Because last week I thought it was Until the End of the World, because it's very similar.
Yeah. A lot of Edge just, we don't know how to end the song, so Edge just hold that note for a long time and do a little bit of wavy stuff on the guitar. Good. Yeah. Song's done.
Fuzz distortion.
All right, well, let's move into the roundtable. And for this edition of the roundtable, we're going to just chat with Mark about various aspects of his U2 life, as it were. And if you're not aware, there's a documentary that he's a part of and is worth checking out. It's on YouTube. The link will be in the show notes, of course. And I think if you Google YouTube Brother documentary, I'm sure it'll show up.
It's right there, yeah.
It's yeah.
Right
there. I don't imagine it's there's a right ton of YouTube Brother documentary
competition. No, there isn't, but it's right there.
Yeah. Definitely worth checking out and just seeing his various exploits. Talk to us, I guess, a bit about just producing the documentary, being a part of that, and sort of why and how it all came about, and then we'll sort of run off from that, I guess.
Well, my friend Mike, who made the movie, he works in commercials and makes movies. And I used to always bug him about, when are you going to put me in a commercial? Or when are you going to put me in one of your, and then, he used to make fun of me about being a big fan of U2. And then, one day he saw like the outpouring of craziness on my Facebook. And then it came to him, you know what? There's never been a fan film made about really, you know, about a fan who likes the band a lot. And so one day he approached me with the idea of, why don't we make a movie called U2 Brother? And, you know, what your dream is, and your dream is to be on stage with them. And I wasn't quite game to expose my life and my craziness. But then he convinced me to allow him to film a little bit. And then when I was watching some of the film back, I was like, geez, Mike, this looks kind of pro. This looks pretty good. So I decided to roll with it with him. And that's what you see. It kind of was, after a while, after we made it, I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't think I should be doing this movie. It's so stupid. Fans are going to think it's dumb. But then the way he presented everything and put everything in order and edited it and stuff, it started making me think, you know what, this is pretty cool. And gosh, if the band sees this, I think they might be proud or think it's kind of cool or neat, or maybe they think it's hokey, who knows. But we just wanted to get
up. Did they see it?
You know what? I've had conflicting reports. Some people have told me they've seen it. I've had one person earlier in the years hand him a copy. But some people say, you know, how do you know Bono knows how to work a DVD player? You don't even know if he can work a DVD player, right? No. Rich people don't know how to do these things. So I've had various conflicting reports. But it's funny because a lot of the crew have seen it now. So that much I know. A lot of the crew have seen it. So that's what I find interesting. But, you know, whenever I've seen Bono or seen the guys, I never say, hey, have you seen my movie? Or, did you watch it? Like, I kind of forget to ask them or whatever. Really, it's kind of insignificant now. So I'm not sure. That's my answer. I'm not very sure. I think they know about it or I think they talk about it. I know U2.com has discussed it and likes it, but I'm not sure if he's actually seen it.
Is that gorgeous yellow car of yours doing?
Oh, you don't want to know, actually.
What happened?
No, you don't want to know. So that gorgeous yellow car, I was going to acrobat practice about two or three Novembers, and I crashed it. I rear-ended somebody. It was in the winter. It was in November. And I crashed the car, and I was all, you know, my gosh, this car is everything to me. My identity. It's like Bono sat on the hood. And I remember, as you know, I won the car, and insurance didn't want to pay for it. The damage wasn't that huge. But in the car by now was almost 9 years old, and it was like my Porsche. I babied the car. And they didn't want to pay for it to be fixed. And so I convinced the insurance person to give me $10,000 for a car that I drove for almost 9 years. And I should add to the fact that when I crashed the car, that was when I found out that my wife and I were having a baby. So it was sort of like, okay, well, I can't get another one of these. It's time to be a man and do the family.
The minivan now, huh?
you know what? I didn't go for the minivan. I went for, it says on my insurance, Toyota wagon. I have a Scion XB. It's stick shift because I wanted to still be cool. It holds a baby seat real well. It's got U2 stickers on it, but it's the yellow car is gone. That's so sad.
I am totally resisting that daddy's going to pay for your crap.
Yes, everybody says already did it. Yeah. Everyone's like, why didn't you save the hood? You could have hung the hood in your basement or, you know, this is where Bono's ass was. And I was like, okay, that's kind of crazy. So the car is gone. So I know. And the movie revolved so much around the car, which is true.
But you know something, though, Mark, this sort of goes to the point of the band right now of living in the moment, put the phone down, live the experience, and have the memory.
Right.
I think that the memory and the tale you tell is worth far more than a piece of metal that his ass sat on, you know?
That's right. So it was devastating that the car was gone and like my wife had to deal with me moping around the house and you know, the kids at my school were like, Mr. Baker, you had this cool car and it's gone. And it was upsetting, but it's gone. The car's gone. I have a new U2 Brother Mobile and it holds a car seat and a stroller real nice and it goes on U2 trip sometimes, but it does the job.
Very good.
So maybe I don't know if we want to spoil the documentary for anybody who hasn't watched it, because it's kind of a bit about both your, like, any of your experiences with U2, and specifically kind of revolves around the idea of getting on stage with U2, right? And some of that touches on that as well. But so we won't necessarily spoil what happens in the documentary, but
that's a nice segue, Chris.
Yeah, post documentary on this most recent tour. I've heard rumor that you made it on stage, apparently.
Right. So I made it on stage in Montreal. So that was like my first show of the tour, was seeing them in Montreal, night one. And the B-man came over and pulled me up on stage. It was absolutely thrilling. Since we're at a podcast, I should say something really funny. You know how you have this, there's the U2 security and then there's the venue security, right? Mm-hmm. So the venue security, I kind of said to them, I got this feeling that I might get pulled up on stage. And the venue guy first looked at me crazy. Then I showed him pictures on my phone of me and Bono on my car and stuff. And then he realized, you're a cool dude, no problem. And then he saw U2 security come and talk to me. But sometimes the venue security, they shift over to the right a little bit, they shift over to the left. And so right when Bono goes to pull me on stage in Montreal, there's a new guy in front of me for venue security. So U2 is trying to now pull me over, and there's one dude who's pushing me back, going, no, no, no. No, and I'm thinking, I will bust you up, man. I've been waiting my whole life for this.
Don't make me have to take off this helmet.
Yeah, don't make me. I was so pissed. But anyway, so it was awesome. I was on stage with Bono, dancing with the band, dancing.
You jumping were around. Cradling him.
Oh, yeah. You know, Bono is a true, what I'm realizing, he's a true showman, and he lives and dies by the seat of his pants. Like, and so literally he has his arm around me and he just kind of made this motion like, lift me or lift me up. I could in my ear. And next thing I know, he just jumps like a leap of faith and he's in my arms. And I'm like, what the? And then
Mark, when I was watching that moment on Meerkat, I was screaming at my computer saying, he just got out of surgery. What is he thinking? But not about you, about him. Because I knew that he had directed you to do it. I'm like, you were just in surgery, you know?
Well, a lot of people think that it was my idea. Are you crazy? It was his idea. And then, you know, AJ, the stagehand, he came kind of running up the stairs like, what are you doing? And then once he realized, you know, I had him in my arms, I decided, okay, I'm going to spin him around and I just lived in the moment at the time. I decided to rock him like a baby.
It was brilliant.
And then put him down on the ground and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, it wasn't what I was expecting to do up there. But
thank God you have the muscles for it, because I sure as hell couldn't do that.
Thank goodness. And you know, people were like, don't drop Bono or don't drop. And I'm like, someone said to me, and I have a lot of non YouTube friends, like people I went to high school with who aren't YouTube fans, that are like, dude, if you dropped Bono, man, you would set back black white relations in this world for like 100 years. Bro. And then people are like, what was it like to have $1 billion in your hand? You had $1 billion in your hand. What was that?
It was heavy. It was heavy.
Bono has a question for you, Mark, though. How
do rock stars smell like?
Everyone asks me that. Everybody, you know what? A lot of women ask me this. What does Bono smell like? And I get close. You know what? I wish I could remember. I feel like in my mind, he smells like leather. In my mind, like
that's all he wears.
but he's not wearing leather on the IE tour. He's wearing like a nice, you know, suit jacket with lapels and stuff, right? So in my mind, he just smells like leather. But I don't remember what he smells like.
What I tend to favor is sandalwood.
Okay, yeah, we heard from you.
So that would be my thing. But the moment was really special. And
I'm curious, Mark, for folks who are like, obviously the band pulls somebody up on I think every stop of this tour, right? Or almost every stop.
Almost every stop.
Yeah. But like, yeah. So you mentioned security talking to you beforehand and stuff. And how much of it is like Bono prearranging and just like randomly grabbing somebody? And how much of it is security sort of saying to Bono, like, hey, this dude in the mirror? I mean, obviously you're fairly easy to stick. Okay.
And this is the question I get asked a lot. Like, how much? Yeah, exactly. How much of it is premeditated and whatnot? before Montreal, I wanted to make a point to meet him and tell him I was in the vicinity. When I saw his bodyguard said, "Hey man, my Irish accent's terrible, so you have to excuse me." But he's like, "Hey man, where have you been? Where have you been, my friend?" And I said, "Well, this is my first time on the tour." And he's like, "Oh, we've been looking for you." That, what? I was like, "Wow, looking for me? Really? Because I'm not hard to miss." And then he said, he goes, "I'm going to let Bono know you're here." And then that was it. And then he said, "Are you going to be on the floor?" And he told me, maybe you should go to the E stage. That was it.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee of where, you know, what was going to happen or whatever. I did have a feeling in Montreal from those comments. And then when I did see Bono prior to the show, signing autographs and stuff, I said something like, you know, I said something crazy and in the moment, like, "Bono, what's it going to take? What's it going to take? I can sing. I can dance. I can look good on camera." And then I made a comment about, "I'll pull you in a rickshaw if I have to, so you won't break your arm again." And then he had a big, big belly laugh at that. I find if I'm able to make Bono laugh, good things happen. How's that? If you're able to, like, it's better than going up and say, "Bono, I love you. Or "Bono, sign this. I find if you rehearse and think about what you want to say to the guys before you actually say it and make it memorable, they remember you.
It's almost like the rehearsed spontaneity that the band themselves use on stage, right? Like the...
Yeah, exactly. So I knew something might happen in Montreal, but there were no guarantees of anything or that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
So that's important to know. That's important that people should know that.
Yeah. You can put yourself in this situation, but obviously the band can decide, "No, we're not going to do that tonight." Or
exactly.
Yeah.
It's not. And I also can say that I felt like before that Montreal show, like, I was like, "Okay, Mark, you're just going to have just one drink. Just have one beer. No, don't go crazy. Don't do anything, you know." I felt like I was being watched a lot. I actually really felt that security and people were watching me, huh. You know, and I think that's, like, you know, proper thing to do. They want to make sure that potential people aren't wasted or, you know, misbehaving or, you know.
Yeah.
So I think they do all those checks that you.
Well,
that
after
you're supposed
all,
to-
it is, as you pointed out, $1 billion decision.
Yeah.
Right. It is. It's a big decision.
Well,
it
it's kind of like decision. The I saw, as Sherry's mentioned, I think, or we've talked about in the past, like on tours.u2.com, we have like the set list, obviously, and description of any notable things that happened. And I hadn't watched the Paris show, the November 11th Paris show at all, or paid attention. I think I was busy or whatever. And then I was just reading the notes how it, like, a fan crashed the stage during one, but when security tries to get back, Bono goes and gets him and sits him down. I was like, "Oh, okay, that's interesting." So I actually went, you know, on YouTube and found the episode, or the song that somebody had taped or whatever. And it's like this massive dude who's, like, you know, taller than any band member and that's built right. And like,
but that was a total class moment because this band is known for showing that same grace and mercy to its fan base whenever something like that happens. And one of my favorite shows from the Lovetown tour was Osaka, Japan. And listening in on that particular recording, there was a security scuttle going on, and Bono scolded security from the stage to let the fans, you know, be or to do whatever. And in all of the other shows that I've been to, whenever there's been something like that, he is the first one to say, "Yo, back off the fan." Mm-hmm. And so in Paris, you know, it just looked like an overzealous fan, you know, who just
slightly drunk, maybe
felt the need, you know, and security did their job, and that was fine. But for Bono to go down,
chase after him,
to Adam's side of the stage, chase after him, bring him back up and just sit down. And now we're going to sit on the bench with Uncle Bono and we're going to sing about, you know, how we're all one. We're all, you know, united in this. That was a very class move by him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Val tweeted in a question for you, Mark, here. Why did you want to go on the stage that bad? And what's sort of the feeling behind that?
You know what? I think it's just the years of watching many YouTube videos, DVDs and whatnot, and seeing, oh my goodness, this fan, and being in attendance at shows and seeing fans get pulled up on stage. And I guess I just wanted to be close to my idols. Like, you know, I just wanted to have that feeling to be, I was chosen. It's nothing like really major in my mind or whatever. It's just like, I love these guys so much and I've watched their career throughout my life. And they've been the soundtrack to almost so many things in my life that once I saw, you know, Bono chose a guitar player. Oh, Bono chose a belly dancer. Oh, but you know, seeing these spontaneous moments happen, I thought, wouldn't it be something if that happened to me? And I know that, you know, I read the chat boards and I see that people are like, oh, this person's so selfish and this person's so selfish. And, you know, I'm definitely not trying to be selfish because, you know, there are times where I definitely stay far away from the band. But at the same time, most of my life now, seeing you two, Mirabald or not, has always been in the GA front row to be as close to them as possible. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it was just a dream. Like, how can I make this come true and be on stage with the band like other fans have been?
And I give you credit for not dressing up as a belly dancer.
Going the obvious route, yeah.
That would be terrible. That would be terrible. That would ruin the show. That would absolutely ruin the show.
And I think there is, like, I mean, I've seen some of the discussion too, and we won't go down that rabbit trail too far. But I know, like, you have to remember that U2 is our people, and they, if there's somebody they have a relationship, whatever form of relationship that is, even if it's something that you're jealous of or what somebody else is jealous of, that's going to be a friend to them or whatever. And it's okay for Mark to be a whatever level of friendship that might be with Bono, if it's just because he remembers sitting on his car or because he remembers pulling him up and carrying him around the stage or whatever it is, that's okay. And that's just part of life. Like, you're
it's not something, you know, I abuse or anything like that or whatever. It's just, it was just a crazy notion. And then I think what really did it for me was, Elevation Tour. And, you know, this was like, you know, waiting in line and some of the first GA experiences and seeing other fans with photo albums, pictures they took from GA or photos after meeting the band or before meeting the band. And this is when, you know, I hadn't really met Bono at all yet, and going, not jealousy, but going, how'd you do this? How did you do this? Where were you? Tell me, how do you waited before? Oh, you waited after? Oh, what's this GA thing? How does it work? And so some of it was just my own discovery and interest and curiosity, really. So that's all.
Yeah.
That's all.
And then on top of that, your cover band got to play on stage. Maybe this is where some of the jealousy comes in.
Okay. So so after Montreal, Gabriel, the singer in my band, Gabriel said, you know, Mark, the band really liked you in Montreal. And he goes, what if he suggests, what if we try and do something for Toronto?
So basically you were either the guinea pig or the appetizer for course of the full band.
You know what? Yes. Yes. And you should hear how the plot changed quite significantly, because the plot, the thing was, the thing that Gabriel wanted to do was he wanted to go on stage and we play Acrobat, period, end of story. and I was like, well, I don't know, dude, because you know how the set list works. Usually they play, they play at this point Desire, or they play Angel from Harlem. So Angel of Harlem. So I don't think, you know, a song that they've never played, they're not going to let a cover band come up and play it. Anyway, we basically brought our instruments, because we're from Toronto, we're all from Toronto. We brought our instruments to the ramp that enters the ACC. And our plan was we were going to renegade serenade, that's what I call it, the renegade serenade Bono before he goes into the venue. And we wanted to play for him, and so that he would see me and see us and hear us ahead of time and hopefully think we were amazing. And then we would position ourselves in a position where he could choose us. Make sense? Mm-hmm. So that day, we brought our instruments from our cars. I got an amp that was battery powered, and I put it, we all gathered around. As you can see, like I always say to people, to do things like this, you have to have no shame and a lot of time. A lot of time and no shame. You pick the one you want. A lot of time, no shame. No shame, a lot of time. So we brought all of our instruments down to the ramp. We're there with all these fans. And then Bono arrives. Bono arrives and doesn't get out of the car.
He rolls down the
window and he says, I'm really sorry. We're running late. We've been filming. I have to go back in and film some more. I can't stay. And he leaves. Ironically, what we found out was he was filming the beginning of the Verse video, the virtual reality, because that was in Toronto. That was what he was filming. So he wasn't lying. He was filming something, but he did not hear us. He did not hear us. We were devastated. We were like, oh, well, there goes that plan. Let's put our instruments back.
But the rest of the people got to have some entertainment.
That's right. That's right. We did play. We did play for the people who were around us. And the news was there. So this is what we think. The news was there. And the news, I think, got clips of us and put us on the news. Does that make sense? The local news.
Yeah.
So the news was there. And we think that the news that got to the band, that got somehow to someone who's media savvy in the band, because I swear they have people who work for you too who are the Twitter people and the Facebook people and the who are constantly reading and watching and paying attention and making note of stuff when they're in the city.
They so are we just went, like Santa Claus. They know when you're sleeping. You know when they're awake. They know if we've been bad or good.
They're listening right
so
now.
Good so. For goodness sake. Yeah. And so essentially, we went into the venue, we positioned ourselves, and Bono's bodyguard came and talked to me, and we were talking and talking. And I think what really did it was I told him, my parents are at the show. I sent my parents for their first U2 show ever. Nice. On their anniversary. So I sent them to the show. And then he asked me, who am I? Who are you here with? And I was like, oh, I'm here with my band, the four guys in my band, blah, 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 whatever. And he was like, oh, cool, cool. Never did I ever say, can you pull us up tonight? We want to play tonight. I'm just going to play it. Just going to play it cool. And there were points in the show where I was like, okay, it's going to happen, guys. Okay, guys, it's not happening. Okay, guys, it's going to happen. Okay, guys, it's not going to happen. He pulled up Jessica, the belly dancer. And pulled up Jessica. I was like, okay, guys, it's not going to happen. We're just going to enjoy ourselves and do our thing. Just enjoy ourselves. And then literally the piano comes up. Bono goes over to Edge. I think they're about to do Every Breaking Wave. And Bono whispers in Edge's ear. And then Bono comes over. And Bono called an audible right there on the spot. Absolutely right there on the spot.
But you know the brilliance of that move, though, because you guys weren't expecting it at that point.
No, we weren't expecting it. We weren't expecting it.
So
at all.
That was truly living in the moment and showing how professional you guys really are to be called last minute. Come on up.
Come on up. Yeah. And I thought, is this really happening? Is it? And you have to understand, like, Gabe, my singer, he's been pulled up before in in Detroit. But Gabe's dream has always been to, I would love to sing with them or perform with them or be a guitar player with them, and has, you know, actively tried to do that, but just been pulled up and been told thank you. And then when we discussed it with the other band members, with My Edge, who's Martin, and Michael, the drummer, they thought we were crazy. But then they also started to believe, well, it could happen because Mark's bananas. So it could happen. And so to see them kind of get on board with just the possibility was amazing. So it's like we're bonded for life. That's the crazy thing. After the event, I feel like we're bonded for the rest of our lives because of this. It's a weird feeling to know. And I guess the crazy thing was, my parents saw this, and I think the crazy thing was the after effects. So, you know, Rolling Stone called Gabriel, and then there was an article in Spin magazine. Then the National Post in Canada had something. Then the Star did something, and then you know, you'd see a snippet on Reuters News, and the Associated Press had something, and all of a sudden we're the number one trending story on Facebook. And then it was just like, wow. Then like, it was like a huge moment for us and maybe the band. And, you know, sure, there's people who are like, I didn't pay money to see a cover band come up on stage. I didn't pay all this money to see, you know, a Black Adam Clayton. What the heck is going on here? It doesn't make sense, right? But it's okay. It's okay. But, I mean, U2 lives the moment. And this, they decided to go with the moment. And we didn't want to disappoint. And we wanted to do the job, do it proud. So, you know, I'm happy about it. I'm happy about it. It's beyond imaginable and fathomable that this can happen. It's something that I could tell my baby boy one day mm-hmm. when he grows up. So
yeah, I think that's awesome, and that's what I think too. The folks who are, you know, acting out of jealousy or whatever and stuff, and right. they have to do their thing, I guess. But I think just got to be happy for somebody who's been able to do this, and as a result of that, then so on this most recent tour, they were supposed to be bringing fans who had been up on stage before to be voted on, and then like potentially coming on stage for the HBO documentary mm-hmm. in Paris that was going to be filmed. Obviously that didn't happen, but mm-hmm. how did you get sort of alerted about this, and what was that process like?
Someone from U2.com the night before, they asked me if I would be interested, or do I know of the contest? Someone asked me, do I know of the contest? And I'm not sure if it was posted on Zootopia or something, but someone asked me from YouTube.com if I know of the contest that's coming. I'm like, what contest? And they said, it's a contest that involves anybody who was on stage this tour has a chance to go to Paris, and a chance, that's the key word, a chance to go to Paris and relive their moment. Or sorry, to go to Paris and a chance to relive their moment. And so I was like, I'm not aware of this contest. And they said, well, it's going to go live tomorrow. Would you sign up for this? Would you sign up? Would you be a person who would be a contestant? And I said, yes, I would. Definitely. I definitely would. They also asked me, and this is the backstory that people don't know, but they also asked me, do you know any of the other contestants? And so, you know, the U2 fan club people, the U2 fans are pretty tight, and usually we all know each other. So in North America, I did know of a bunch of the people who were pulled up. Mm-hmm. And so the person asked me for, do you have their contact? No. I mean, yes. I mean, no. I mean, no. No. Yes. Well, yes, I do.
You're asking me to give you competition. Are you killing me? Yeah.
That's right. And I was like, and I seriously was like, okay, Mark, you had your moment. Karma's good. And so, you know, I helped the person sort out some of the people who also have been pulled on stage in North America, because I'm either Facebook friends with them, or we've spoken on Twitter or whatnot. And so I alerted them to the contest as well. Make sense?
Yeah. That's good.
And it's what real fans do, and what, you know, whatever. You know, it's all good. So here's the part that's a little mystifying. So when the contest went live, they put my pictures up. And I was like, what the? What the heck? Like, why are my pictures up there for a contest I want to win? It's either they like me and I'm going, or it's because, well, you can maybe have the experience like Mark had an experience because
right. We're
not picking Mark again. So I was a little, I felt a little befuddled. How's that? I was questioning what was going on. I was questioning a lot what's going on. My poor wife has to deal with so much and hear me go on and on about you two stuff all the time, as all of our spouses do, I'm sure, or yeah. Girlfriend or boyfriend. But my wife was hearing me mull this stuff over. And then when the contest went live with the voting, I was like, really? Voting? 5 votes and that's how you're going to pick? I just thought it was a little strange. I know people had their doubts about it. Some people were full throttle with it. I actually spent most of the contest feeling guilt, a bit of guilt.
Interesting.
I felt guilty that they put my pictures up. I felt guilty the voting page had Acrobat up. I felt guilty of wanting to win this. But I felt guilty that I have this, there's an unfair advantage of my picture being there. And that's not, I don't know, maybe that's not how contests were run. Then I started questioning, is there really a contest? Maybe they've chosen these people already and they've just decided instead of choosing them, we're going to use this as clickbait for our website. Who knows? Who knows? I don't know. I don't know. I've never felt so much internal conflict with wanting to win something and at the same time feeling like the stakes, the playing field, maybe not fair, perhaps. And you know, if anybody knows who I am, I don't consider myself a better fan than anybody or consider myself. I wait in line like everybody else. I get the tickets the same way everybody else. You know, there are people who are writing me asking me, so did you sign a confidentiality agreement? Did you win and not tell anybody? Is that what's happening? Or you could tell me. Come on, Mark. You tell me. And I was like, dude, I know nothing. Well, why did you contact me about the contest before? I'm like, I was told to. I know nothing.
One of the things about that contest, which, you know, taking a step back, I did a Google News search about you two within that 24-hour time frame when that voting was live. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing story after story from the local television station or a local magazine or a local newspaper from the fans who were also, you know, contestants in this, reaching out, you know, going, as you said, full throttle to try to have that opportunity, because at the end of the day, it was, you know, a vote. So the more votes you got, the better chance you had. So people went to their local media to try to, you know, garner attention. And I'm sitting back going, damn, those PR people are good.
They didn't have to spend.
They hardly spent anything. And they've got all these diehard fans, grassroots effort, promoting watch HBO on Saturday night for our concert. Think about it.
Yeah.
Oh, you're
so,
right.
So from a marketing and PR standpoint, that was a masterclass of brilliance.
It was.
At the same time, it put fans like you, it put fans like a whole, you know, host of others who, you know, I'm either friends with or familiar with or whatever. It put them in that same boat of feeling either, you know, the conflict or having to deal with some of the spamming that was happening or having to deal with some of the flame wars that were happening. It was a very interesting study in sociology, watching it all happen, you know?
You know what? And you are so absolutely right. And I,
so,
and I,
you
think,
know, I looked at it saying, at what cost? You've just turned this into the Hunger Games, you two.
Yeah, that's what that, yes, yes, the Hunger Games of you two. That's exactly what it was. And I really felt if my pictures weren't on there, I would have done not the spamming, but hey, vote for me, blah, 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 vote for me, vote for me, right? But once my pictures and stuff were on there, I felt like all I did was make one post on my Facebook. I retweeted a bunch of stuff on my Twitter, but I made one post on Twitter and I felt guilty doing anything more because I just felt, you know, a little abysmal at what looked to be perhaps my involvement in something that.
And you had nothing to do with that. That was on the U2.com team, right?
Yeah, I had nothing to do with it. Yeah. I had nothing to do with it. So anyway. So then it comes out. I get the email that I've won. And of course I'm overjoyed and I'm telling my friends and my family and everything that I've won, and I'm excited because I've never thought about Paris, seeing them in Paris. And what you need to know is my wife, she speaks French. She's fluent in French. And my wife's dream has always been to go to Paris, always. So it's just, it's serendipity, perhaps, that now my crazy, crazy fandom has now flipped the script to actually me helping her do her dream, which is to go to Paris, even though it's on YouTube terms and it's a 48-hour trip. But still, I am helping my wife achieve her dream of going to Paris. And so, essentially, I was just happy that I was going on the trip. And happy that I was going to see them overseas, and happy that I won, and happy that, you know, I'm going to bring her with me.
Yeah. So what happened? You departed Toronto.
So I left Toronto. So normally when I do the U2 thing, I organize it myself. I fly out or do whatever. I drive whatever. And what's been sad is this tour, every time I've been on stage or anything that's happened, you know, my wife has been at home with her baby, right? And so she's been upset and wishes she was there and is seeing it all unfold on social media and stuff like that. So it was pinnacle for me to bring her. So because I had to plan the trip to bring her, they didn't book me on an early flight to Paris by myself. We had to work out my wife's details on how she was going to fly to Paris. And then I said, book me on my wife's plane. And so that plane happened to go from Toronto to Montreal and then switch over from Montreal to Paris. And as I sat on the airport strip about to leave in Toronto, I start hearing the reports come out on my phone. Just a few, like, have you heard about what's going on in Paris? There's a few people dead at a music theater thing, and there's a bomb maybe. And so, you know, and then they're like, oh, please turn off your phone. I tried to leave my phone on as long as possible. We fly out. We land in Montreal. I turn my phone on, and literally it's gangbusters on my phone. And it's like, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you alive? Where are you? Did you land in Paris? Are you? All these concerned people, fans, family, friends. So I decide to go on the news on my phone, and I realize it's messed up over there. It's, wow, it's major. So we walk to the desk where we catch the next plane to Paris. And at that point, the U2 people who organized the trip, they called me and two wonderful, wonderful women. And they just said, Mark, we're not flying anyone into Paris. State of emergency, blah, blah, blah. We're going to put you up in a hotel in Montreal. And then we will send you your flight arrangements tomorrow to fly back home. And, the people who lost their lives and the things that have happened are definitely more trivial to how I'm feeling. Definitely more trivial to, oh, I don't get to go to Paris and I don't get to go see you too. And I don't get to, right. I think for my wife and I, it was there's just a lot of emotion built up to get this far in the trip for us, and for us to get the tickets, take the baby to grandma's, organize his food and his diapers and everything, pack our bags, get the flights ready, get to the airport, do this, do that, be in it, and then find out a terrorist plot.
But I see it this way, though. Because you were taking your wife, had you not taken your wife, you might have been on an earlier flight.
That's right.
You might have been stuck over there.
That is correct. So that's the other point I was going to make, too. Yes, absolutely. Because I was taking my wife, she kind of saved us from being over there. And you have to know, I was in contact with some of the contestants who were also there. Some people had landed already. Some people were still in the air using the plane's Wi-Fi and we were talking. And so there, you know, and then some people were just about to get on a plane and didn't get on the plane. So in a way, you're right. My wife definitely saved a lot of hassle and confusion and problems and issues. And you know, and there's also the emotion. There's also the emotions of normally I would be over there by myself and she'd be at home, and hearing this news would be devastating to know that her husband. So there was just, you know, people were like, are you sad about the trip and everything? I think it was just the buildup and this whole undeniable crash as to the reality of what happened in Paris and how it just destroyed people's lives. Perhaps such a, you know, because it's, I know it's a Western world thing and France, and there are other places in the world where terrorism happens, but unfortunately this has gotten the media attention and everything. And for some people, it's a really big deal. I just can't believe that it actually directly affected me in this small way, but I've never thought about Paris before. And the one time I think about it, people are dying. It's absolutely horrendous. It's just, surreal is the weird thing. It's just so surreal.
Well, and I think we're speaking obviously from this, from the, you know, a U2 perspective with a U2 lens on events, and had this happened not when U2 is about to do an event there, it still would have been very traumatic and very, just hard to process and understand what's going on with the world in general. But just as fans, even though I wasn't even going to Paris, it's just kind of like I was with my family and hearing about this thing happening. It's like your thoughts immediately turn to like, well, the HBO special and U2 is there and what are they going to do? And how is this all affecting all this stuff? And obviously, you know, like fans like you flying over and just fans in general who are flying there for the, you know, we got an email at U2 site from somebody who was, you know, this was their trip and they had spent all their money to go there and like, now it can't happen. And that's like, obviously everybody, like I said at the beginning of the show, lives are infinitely more important than seeing a U2 show.
More important.
But still, life does go on in some small way, and trying to just process all this stuff as it affects all of us in weird ways. And I think it's the awesome part about having the internet such that we do with Twitter and et cetera, is the community that you get to be a part of as a result of this. And you're not just sitting alone processing this. Like you're saying, you were like in communication with everybody else who's, you know, in similar situation to you and sort of trying to figure it out.
And it's such a strange thing. Like it's different when you maybe, you know, in your life when you're going, oh, I'm going here on vacation, right? It's different when your whole family knows you're going to Paris.
Yeah.
all your work knows you're going to Paris. All of U2's fans everywhere knows that these contestants are going to Paris. Like so many people knew, obviously, because of the contest, they knew that that's the destination, and the destination is now in turmoil. Yeah. And, you know, I have to say that, I mean, the heartfelt warmth and concern was, sorry, the concern that I got from so many people, absolute strangers, was heartfelt and very touching, like to the point where, wow, I was overwhelmed with, again, another emotion, overwhelmed with thanks. And I felt some of that U2, that true, honest U2 love of, you know, Mark, I can't believe, oh, are you safe? Are you okay? Get back home safely, you know, and same with the other contestants. They really felt that love of, you know what, we just want you back safe. And all this could happen another time and things like that. So, you know, it's just so, I tell people it was like emotionally, spiritually, and somewhat physically draining. When I pulled my luggage off of the plane that was going to Paris, because that plane still went to Paris anyway, it took them 4 hours to find my luggage after they pulled it off. And so we were at the airport forever. That's again, a small, minute detail compared to the tragedy. But I tell you, I've just been, it's been a kind of a rough week, especially for my wife, who's been going over it in her head, being a mother and heading to, could have possibly headed to a place where it's so dangerous and stuff. So it's just been surreal and crazy and a whirlwind, really, really, really and truly. Yeah. I'm thankful for our fans, though. Our fans, the fans are awesome. The true, the good, the really good fans. So many people, strangers, just reached out, and I'm really thankful and appreciative.
Yeah, that's awesome, and glad you had. Could come on and just sort of express some of what happened and give folks a bit of the story, I guess, as to how it went down from your perspective. And I know you two has said that the show is postponed and not canceled. So who knows what will happen as far as how that relates to the HBO thing and whether they'll still bring fans over and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, we hope, you know, you get your chance to do that again for whether it's this time or the next tour, who knows.
and definitely like for me at this point when I won the contest or whatever, at that point I was just thinking, there's so many of us. I think there's 8 winners from this. Some people haven't revealed themselves who they are, and some people did reveal who they were, but I think there are about 8 winners. And I kind of got the feeling that, you know what, this was a chance to relive your moment. So maybe Bono will choose you, or maybe the HBO people. But right now for me, the big thing was like, I get to take my wife to Paris. That was a big, for me, that was the big thing. So I just wanted people to know that being on stage is great, and it's happened 2 times or 3 times and whatnot. But that after when I won this trip, that wasn't my focus. I was just like, I get to go to Paris and bring my wife.
And you don't have the kids with you.
Yeah.
And I have my kid with me. I don't have my kid.
No. I can tell you that as a parent of 3, that's infinitely worth way more than getting on stage with you two. As great as I'm sure it is, but...
three, you're crazy. That's madness.
Yeah,
that's mad. You better teach them. You better get a bass and a guitar and some drums.
Yeah, exactly. You got them on the Rock Band thing. We'll transition here eventually.
I'm very happy to be leaving my 2 with Grandma and Granddad next week.
Yeah, which is that's the one. I guess we'll segue into that quickly just before we wrap up. I know we've gone a little over time, but next week coming up is when sort of the big. Dublin shows are U2's and I are in Belfast right now, and today and tomorrow as we record anyways in Belfast, and then heading to Dublin on the 23rd, 24th, 27th, etc. And over half, I think we figured out, our staff from @U2.com are in Dublin for the shows. And Mark, you're going to the shows, I think, or a couple?
I am going. I'm going to number 3 and number 4.
Nice.
And I'm coming back. So I'm doing the planes again,
Do you pack the mirror ball suit?
The mirror ball suit is packed. So when I got my luggage back from the plane and going to Paris, I just put it back down in the basement. I haven't touched anything. Just left everything as it is. Everything's
Mark,
folded and neat, nice and neat.
What exactly is your outfit made of? Is it made out of an actual mirror ball?
Okay, so the helmet is a hard hat. And I actually silicone glued little pieces of mirror onto it. So that is the true mirror ball part. The other part of the outfit is actually a company that makes disco lab gear. Disco gear, it's called. And they make this shiny material. So I've actually had the pants from years ago because I used to you know, go to dance clubs and go raving and partying. And I used to wear these pants out for a long time. And then the company started making other aspects of clothing. And so I started to buy them. And then when I got them all together, I was like, hey. So it's just a material that's shiny and it's very lightweight. And I almost want to say the company's name, but then then I give away my secret source of where I get my fine thread. So anyway, so it's just a shiny material that they make into various things.
Nice.
And
yeah, in the chat room, U2GW asked, can you tell the diehards if there's anything planned by at U2 for Dublin, Ireland, etc.? And Sherry, I'm not going, so I can't plan anything.
We have over half of our staff flying internationally. We are going to be spanning all of the different shows. So I'll be at shows 2 and 3. Matt's going to be at shows 3 and 4. I think Tasula's going to be at shows 3 and 4. Others going to be at 1 and 2. So we will not have critical mass of staff to do anything as a site. But what we are doing is we are encouraging fans to go and explore the city, go and enjoy the local acts and the local events happening. And, you know, you've got Zooropa, which is another tribute band. They're going to be performing at the Opium Room in Dublin on Wednesday, November 25th, starting at 7 p.m. So, you know, a lot of us are going to be going out to that just to support the local folks. And not to sound selfish, but this is our vacation too. So we kind of want to have a little bit of R&R time. You know, I'm going to be traveling with my husband. We don't get a lot of quality time together without the kids. So I love you guys to pieces, but I'm going to spend some quality family time as well while we're in Dublin.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens next week as far as the podcast. We may try and wrangle somebody onto the show from Dublin, or
we'll be available.
Yeah, we'll do something.
Eve and I will be available if you need us.
Time zones and all that stuff will be figured out, hopefully.
Yeah,
and for folks who are going over there, we at U2.com has worked on a Dublin visitors guide, right, Sherry? Is that
live-ish? Yes, it is live, and we will put the link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, so you can check that out for tips, tricks, advice. I don't know what else, but stuff for visiting Dublin. Awesome. So, yeah, it's Mark. Have you been over to the homeland before?
I have not, and so that the whole purpose of this trip was, I might as well see the boys in the Mecca land. Might as well see it. So,
yeah, it'll be fun. So, Mark, where can folks who want to follow along with your adventures, say on Twitter or wherever, what do you give out as your online digits?
So my online digits on Twitter, on YouTube, brother, YouTube, B-R-O-T-H-R, no E. So YouTube, brother, on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook as well, facebook.com/YouTubeBrother. email, YouTubeBrother@gmail.com. I'm pretty accessible And if I've been in contact with you or spoken to you, please make sure you come up and say hi and introduce yourself, because I do meet a lot of fans, and sometimes I have to make sure I got to place the face, lots of fans, and I need to make sure I place the faces with the names properly. So please do not hesitate to come up to me. I'm very approachable.
All right.
You're not going to be traveling with the license plate, are you?
You know what? No, I'm going to put the license plate up. I've decided to put the license plate away now.
Smart.
I've decided not to bring the license plate.
That thing's got to be heavy to be, you know, hanging around the neck while you're watching the show.
And when Bono jumped into my arms in Montreal, he kind of bent it, and I had to bend it back.
You know something? That replaces the hood.
Yeah. His butt probably touched the license plate anyways, so.
And on that note, and on that bombshell,
we shall
end the podcast.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. So you can follow along if you like. Obviously, the @U2 Twitter account, twitter.com/ATU2, is where you can see all the details on what's going on with the concerts. Are you live tweeting the one tomorrow, Sherry, or who's on?
I will do the first hour or so, but then our family is starting our commute to Ireland, so
commute.
So I will only be able to stay on until about 4:30 Eastern.
Right.
So I'll do the first half, but by the time this goes live, the show will probably end up being concluded, and this is all a moot point.
And you can listen to past episodes and subscribe in iTunes and stuff and find all those kind of links for the podcast itself. Mark, just for your information, goodstuff.fm/ATU2 is where you can find it. And this is /18 is this episode number. If you're looking for links and stuff we've discussed, use the hashtag AskAtU2 to send in your questions, comments, and thoughts and ideas for the podcast. And we'll use that in a future episode. And you can also follow the AtU2 site on Facebook, facebook.com/ATU2com. That's where you can find them. I'm iChris on Twitter. Sherry, what's yours if people want to follow your commute?
As always, AtU2com, Sherry.
Yes. And we will be back in some form next week, next episode. Thank you, folks, for listening. Until then, have a great day. Talk to you later. Bye.